How about this for an idea? Building the NHL's next franchise and doing it in a pandemic. We're going to catch up with two of Seattle's most important hires and have a conversation with a CEO who brought them on board. Business, hockey, technology, COVID, kids, and diversity. It's The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Coots, it is!
You guys are sensitive over there.
Shut up!
Podcasting from the home studio of The Chirp with Darren Millard in Las Vegas to the hockey world. I'm Darren Millard. Welcome in. Really happy to have you along. Remember to subscribe and hit that like button. We really appreciate you participating with this podcast. This is an episode that I've very much been looking forward to since we started putting the plans together. Respecting, acknowledging, and promoting Gender Equality Month and accomplishing that through our game. So enter the NHL's 32nd team, the Seattle Kraken, who are 6 months from training camp, coming off a year-long global crisis. And those two, they don't really go together. So navigating the growing franchise, two women, Katie Townsend and Kendall Boyd Tyson, who are brilliantly funny, they're entertaining, and so beautifully honest. The Todd that you'll hear them speak of is Todd Lewicki, the CEO of the Seattle Kraken. First up, and you'll hear from Todd in just a little bit, but I want to bring you this conversation with Katie and Kendall that's more than just hockey. It's real life, it's right now, and they're owning it. We caught up with Katie and Kendall recently on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Katie Townsend is the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications, and Kendall Boyd Tyson is the Vice President of Strategy Business Intelligence. I have no idea what that means. So let's start there, Kendall. Explain that title.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. You know, I think part of being within a startup of an organization means that early on you wear a lot of hats. And I think the title really does kind of just reflect the many hats that I wear. You know, practically speaking, I oversee a lot of the cross-functional projects that we do that tie, you know, marketing, partnerships, and ticket sales together. I also oversee, you know, our traditional business intelligence department, so managing all of our reporting, dashboarding, and advanced analytics. And then I oversee our back-end data systems, so the data and information that comes into our data warehouse and into our database via email or ticket sales, et cetera. And then I also kind of help manage our FP&A activities as well. So I have a lot under that umbrella, but love all of it.
Katie, yours is easier, at least from my perspective, to understand marketing and communications. How has your role been in this startup?
Been interesting for sure. I actually started as Vice President of Communications, and then just about April of last year, as the pandemic hit, took on that bigger role. So the four pillars that are underneath me are communications, which include hockey and corporate, brand and our creative team, broadcast and marketing. And I think particularly on that communications and marketing side, yes, there's a startup culture, and we're doing things with few people and we're lean, but then doing it during the pandemic and making sure that we had the right messaging and the right activations, and were we doing things in person or virtual, and how are we being respectful to the social unrest that we saw in the summertime of last year, has all been a pretty interesting challenge for sure.
You know, I leaned on my boss with the Vegas Golden Knights and my other job, Eric Tosi, who handles a lot of the same areas that you do, and just asked him about how things evolved in the lead up to the launch of a franchise. And he kind of walked me through it and said, we kind of likened it to landing on an aircraft carrier where you don't have as much runway as you'd like to have, and it's moving all the time. The pandemic, Katie, tell me how that's affected how you thought you would be doing this.
I think it's probably two ways. I think it's affected how we onboard staff because we have to keep hiring. And, you know, we're very, very fortunate when we compare ourselves to other sports teams who are having to furlough people. We have to keep that ramp up going. So I have three members of my team, maybe more, who I have never met in person, but I have done all of their interviews via Zoom. I have hired them. I've never met them in person. So that's interesting. And it's at least three. It could be a couple more. And then I think we had a lot planned, particularly last summer, that it was going to be the summer of the fans, that we have an amazing fan base here in Seattle. You know, we got those 32,000 deposits in one day. We have 60,000 people on a wait list. And so we were going to go out, we were going to blitz the region, we were going to have this summer of the fan. And obviously that wasn't appropriate to be in person. I think we were also judging people's mood and how people were feeling. So most of what we've done has been virtual, digital experiences, whether that's panels, whether that's Q&As. So I think that's been the real biggest change of the pandemic, that we've shifted how we meet our fans and where we meet them. And I would say that I think there is some advantages that come out of that, that as we think towards expansion draft, for example, if we draft a player who is in Sweden, it won't be odd for a fan to have a Zoom call with him, for fans to meet him via that way. And maybe 18 months ago, that would have seemed strange. You know, I think our acceptance of Zoom videos and iPhone videos has grown. And so that's something that in marketing, we can be excited about and we can embrace. But it certainly meant that we have met far fewer of our fans in person than we would have liked to.
Kendall, what's on the dry erase board in your office, in your workspace right now? Those get to things.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. One of the main ones is building the team. Similarly to Katie, I have three people on staff right now, all of whom were hired during the pandemic, and we have not met in person. You know, one currently lives in Denver, one lives in Minnesota, one lives here locally, but even, you know, he and I haven't, you know, had a chance to grab coffee. So, but growing that team is certainly number one on my list. Number two on my list is really related to the technologies and setting up systems in place so that we as an entity from a business intelligence standpoint can provide data as a service. Our job is really to organize the information and present it to the departments in a format that is helpful and usable to them. So when I think about, you know, Katie's team on the marketing and comms side, making sure that we have technologies and software in place so that we can analyze the different aspects of the stories that are going out there, the coverage that we're getting, you know, what are their email rates, you know, are people opening when we reach out to them? Same thing when it comes to partnerships and ticketing. You know, we, like I said, kind of really look at data as a service. And the number two thing on my list is to really kind of build out those softwares and technologies, and as well as building out those reports and dashboards in a format that the various departments find them useful.
Is this, Kendall, have you worked in hockey before?
No, this is my first time working in hockey. I started my, I guess, kind of sports career. I was a ball girl for the Minnesota Lynx when I was much younger. And then recently spent time in the golf industry, both at the LPGA and at Topgolf.
So is this experience, and Katie, I'd love to get your opinion on this as well, joining a hockey team, does it feel like you're joining the hockey world, or does it feel still like it's a business first and the hockey will come?
Yeah, I think for me, it started off as joining a company first and a business. And as we've ramped up, hockey has become, you know, more and more present. I think when I joined, I don't think we had anyone on hockey ops. Katie can correct me if I'm wrong,
no,
but
we did not.
We didn't have a hockey op team per se. And so as they've joined, it's been just so, so cool. And I'll, you know, for example, today we had a team meeting and our head of video analysis did a breakdown of like shots and, you know, penalty shots, where he was talking about the approach and, you know, faking a shot and using your backhand. And he did this, you know, he had drawn lines on the video and overlaid, you know, two shots at the same time. And I think everybody who in the company who doesn't work in hockey ops was like, oh my gosh, like, this is awesome. You know, and when I joined, we didn't have any of that, I'll tell you.
I totally agree with Kendall. I think I certainly was not hired for my hockey knowledge. I have not worked in hockey before, and it's something that I'm learning. And so I joined a company, and when I joined in a communications role, I was telling stories about the arena and construction and diversity and inclusion and technology and transportation and then sustainability. Not a lot of hockey stories. I mean, we obviously had the hiring of Ron Francis and that was a big moment, but now we're definitely transitioning into telling more hockey stories. And I think one interesting thing that the pandemic has affected is one of my plans for last season was field trips. Let's go and meet other people at other teams, learn how they do things. I was lucky enough to go to All-Star, and I think that was maybe my last travel trip, and to meet people from the league. But it's been interesting that feeling part of the hockey community has probably slowed because we have bi-weekly calls, but we haven't been able to get out there and meet other hockey folks as much as we would have liked.
So will you get that opportunity? Are there plans to get out to a few of these arenas?
I would say not this season. I think once we start playing, it will obviously be different.
Wow.
I may try and do some trips where I tack on a day or so to meet with folks and to do it as a fact-finding, education gathering mission. But no, we will not travel until our team starts traveling in October time.
Does that make your jobs, your respective positions, more difficult? Or how much more difficult does it make them? That's probably a better way to ask it.
I don't know whether it does because we have such great leadership. So I would say, you know, Todd is renowned as one of the best CEOs in sport and has huge hockey experience. And then our COO, Victor, was with the Canucks for around 2 decades. And so in that way, I feel like we have really, really good experience here who can guide us and can make the right introductions. I think perhaps what the pandemic has done has taught us that we have to rely on our instincts even more, because it's like, we're just going to build this. Like, I can look at other teams' org charts, but I can't really get in there and see how they're doing things. Plus, what you do tend to learn is that every team seems to be set up slightly differently. So I think we just have to use our guts and go with, this feels right for our team, and it might evolve.
Kendall?
Yeah, you know, I think on the technology side, technology tends to be in general done a bit more virtually traditionally. So we've, you know, always leaned on the other teams, and we have kind of a joint Slack channel with BI folks from the other teams, and that's been incredibly useful. You know, I do think that there's an aspect of just being in Seattle where technology here is just different, right? When you think about technology adoption and the apps on your phone and the things that you use, so much of that calls Seattle home from a headquarters perspective. And many of our fans work in the technology industry. And so there's just a different kind of level of expectation. But I don't think that expectation has necessarily changed from the pandemic standpoint. And so on our side, we're still just trying to meet the expectations of the fans from a technology standpoint. And I think their expectations have continued and maybe, you know, slightly changed. You know, we're all watching a lot more Netflix and Amazon Prime Video and things like that. So there's a lot more emphasis on digital content and how you kind of manage what is presented to you and how companies manage what's presented to you. And so we're kind of navigating that. But otherwise, you know, I think on our side, it's a little bit of business as usual.
Kendall, how is technology going to impact fans when they go inside the rink and are in there in person? What do you guys have planned?
Oh man, we have a lot planned, and you know, I think I'm excited to, I will say, you know, Darren, to unveil it when we play our first game. So I won't give away too much now because I don't want to hinder the excitement. But I would say, you know, we're not leaving any stone uncovered. When it comes to technology, we are building our own app in-house with a mission to kind of wage war, what they call wage war online, right? So you tend to go to these big arenas, you stand in line for the bathroom, you stand in line for a beer, you stand in line for your food. You know, we're really trying, you stand in line to scan your ticket. We're really trying to, you know, say, look, our goal is to, how can our app completely really cut down on the time that people spend in line so they can spend more time socializing with family and friends and in their seat watching the game. So that's one area. You know, I think overall when they walk into the arena, they'll see some pretty unique aspects of technology. We actually have 2 scoreboards. So not just one in the center, but 2. which is going to give you, you know, a pretty unique kind of view from a variety of seats. Whereas, you know, typically if you were kind of on the corners, you know, maybe high up or from the back, like it was a little challenging to kind of see, right? Because you're like on the corner of the video board. You know, now you'll have something that's much closer to you that'll give you a unique view of plays and replays and things like that. So I'll highlight those two. Again, there'll be other things that are in there that we're excited to talk about, but excited to have you guys up at the arena and show them off in person.
Yeah, we can't wait to see that. And I've been through an expansion draft before with Vegas unveiled their team, and I was lucky enough to be involved in that. I can't wait to see what you guys have in store. Katie, as a producer, news producer from that world, you're used to telling stories. What about managing the message and also trying to tell a story at the same time? Do I sort of have that blend?
Yeah, I think part of me still definitely thinks as a journalist and as a storyteller, and I hope that's a good thing in terms of when we're building our practice facility. What are reporters who are coming here every day going to need? What technology do they want? What space do they want? What's the visuals? What's the audio sounding like? So I think I definitely have that, and hopefully I'm good at the pitches that I send out that people are like, yep, these are good stories. This is what we want to tell. I think what we joke about internally is we've had a very, very positive reception. I mean, we were blown away by the response to the brand, and we don't take that for granted. And we feel very fortunate that that was the case. And so I think my role, and certainly the comms people that I'm bringing on board, it will be different if we are on a losing streak, and we're under no illusions about that. Those messages might be different, or if we have difficulties with a coach or a player, those times are going to be tougher for us. But I think so far we've just been on a really good journey of telling positive stories, and stories that I would say both locally and nationally people want to tell and they want to hear. I think some of that is because we're the new kids on the block. I also think that we are doing things differently. You see that with some of the technology Kendall talked about, ability aspects of the arena, some of the transportation initiatives, and certainly our focus on D&I. And so that's made it a pretty easy story to get behind, I think.
As women, does it feel any different than any other place that you guys have worked? I'll start with Katie with that.
It's an interesting one. I came from a communications agency that was founded by women. Our president was female there. And so I've worked in places with a lot of female employees. And this was different initially. Certainly for the first part, I was the only woman on our executive committee, which was only because we were small and we were growing, and now we've added female leaders to that committee. I think what feels different to me is having the opportunity to shape something for future women. So the conversations that we've had around parental leave policies, about how we have spoken about parents during the pandemic. You know, I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. Kendall has a 1-year-old. So our role in the pandemic with no childcare has been different to some of our male counterparts. And so I think having a voice, because we are a startup and we are growing, and because D&I is valued in our organization and those diverse voices are valued, makes me feel like I have a responsibility, but it's also something that I enjoy.
Kendall?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it certainly felt different, and primarily with the amount of female leadership that were in place and that continue to grow. And that really has led to voices at the table. I think in prior positions, you know, there were certainly a significant number of, you know, women when I was more junior at an analyst level, and even, you know, at a consultant. But certainly as, you know, you looked at the ladder going up, it traditionally got, you know, certainly more male, and, you know, kind of almost all male, right, in most cases. And what I think ends up happening is, you know, a lot of decisions are made kind of in those, you know, upper spheres and then kind of pushed down. And where that does, you know, tend to happen somewhat in our organization as well, the difference is that there are certainly more women at the table who are a part of those conversations. And therefore, I do feel like the decisions are different. I think the decisions have a lot more consideration than, you know, what may have even been brought up or not even thought of potentially without having women at the table in those discussions.
A 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 1-year-old on this call. And how's it so quiet? I don't understand what you guys are doing. give me your secret. I've had a black lab and 2 kids poke their head in the time that we've been on this call.
It's time for a kids show. They've finished their virtual school. They've had their lunch and they get their 1 kid show. So that's the bribery before it turns to mayhem again.
You guys are geniuses.
Yeah, on my side, I don't know. On my side, we are incredibly grateful for daycare. So she likes it. We like it. And that's been, you know, a big plus for us. But to that point, I think, you know, it's just been so much has just in so many ways has lined up. I mean, Washington passed a family leave initiative. I think in Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe in they passed it in 2018. I think they started collecting funds in 2019. And then literally in 2020 was the first year that you could, you know, execute on this leave and draw on it. I mean, talk about timing that no one knew about, but, you know, those are, you know, the types of things that, you know, growing this team and the importance of DE&I and the organization we're trying to build, to be building it in the state of Washington. Those are the types of, you know, pluses that we have on our side. And those are the types of things that, you know, when our fans look at our organization can look at us and say, okay, they get it, right? Like they understand, you know, this homeschool life. They understand, you know, having kids pop in. You know, I think my daughter was sick, I think a few weeks ago, and I was just sitting here with her on her lap. She was on my lap, and I was just like, Katie, like, what do I do?
And what did you do?
You know, and it's, Katie was like, get off of Zoom.
Decline your meetings.
So, yeah. you're trying to do too much. Everyone will understand. But I think that's like I said, this is the type of stuff that, you know, I feel our organization is really different and we can have those conversations. And I feel incredibly comfortable as a new mom to, you know, lean on folks in our organization that have gone through this experience. And, you know, it's okay to decline your meetings and say, my daughter is sick. Like, that's okay. Like, go take care of yourself, take care of your family. And that's really unique and awesome.
When we adopted our first child, we were surprised that you didn't get as much parental leave as you do when you birth a child. So that was a real eye opener. But I want to ask you guys and compare something. And this is to do with my personal history. Is my wife worked for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment for 15 years. She ran the American Hockey League team and worked in every department, Raptors, Maple Leafs, and the various franchises. And just an admission here to you, to Katie and Kendall, not once in those 15 years did I ever think, my wife's going off to an environment that's male-dominated. I just looked at it like she was going to work. Am I wrong in that? Did I miss a bit of the message and the environment that she's going into? Because we do talk about so much equality that strides have been made, and look at your company in particular. So, Katie, and I accept all feedback here on this. Where was my thought process aligned to where it should have been?
I think that's a really difficult question. I think undoubtedly, if you are a minority in that setting, it presents some challenges. And I think that's regardless of personalities. It puts a pressure or an interesting take on conversations or discussions that may come up, because in general, we don't like to be the lone voice. You know, we like to have solidarity with people to say, yes, that's my experience. And for example, there was a meeting the other week where we were talking about where we put nursing pods in our new training center. Mm-hmm. And it happened that I was the only woman in that conversation. And so it's me who's saying, well, as a mother who's breastfed and who's pumped at work, here's my perspective. And I think it's always nicer to have someone else who can back you up in that setting. So on the one hand, yes, I think I'm sure that her life was, I don't want to say more challenging, but there were conversations that were trickier being the lone woman. What I would say is that I think personalities do play a part in this. And I think Todd is very supportive, very keen that people give their opinion and that, okay, well, let's ask the person who has been through this experience. and let's bring them into it. And I think I feel like we have some very involved dads, for example, who are also saying, hey, I need to take a break today because one of my kids is sick. And, you know, my wife and I are trading off. I'm going to do meetings in the morning. She's going to do them in the afternoons. So it's kind of a complex issue because it's like, yes, I probably think that it does make for some trickier conversations. But I think the peers that you are surrounded with have such a big impact on that culture and environment.
And Kendall, for the record, I had that conversation with my wife last night in preparation for this discussion, and she said the same thing. She never really thought of it any different either. It was just going to work. But they also had some strong female leadership in their company at the time as well. So just pick up on that thought.
Yeah, to me, at least from my experience, it really kind of sometimes comes down to allyship. And do you feel like you are the lone voice with no allies? Or do you feel like maybe you are a diverse voice, but the people who are around you, you feel like have your back and are your allies? And in particular, one of the pieces I heard the other day on a call during International Women's Day was a lot around allyship is what is said when you're not in the room. And so to me, maybe it felt like, I don't have to feel uncomfortable because I know that the people that surround me, they have my back when I'm in the room, but most importantly, have my back when I'm not in the room. And so they're not going to let, anything disrespectful be said, or, if a conversation that comes up that they feel like, listen, we're not the experts on nursing pods. Like, let's just ask, those are the types of folks that you hope to surround yourself with. And if you do, then you're right. It feels like you're just going to work.
Katie, do you think women worry more about what's said when they're not in the room than men do?
I don't want to generalize, but I sort of think yes. I think I would say in my experience, yes. I think women tend to worry more and tend to, this is a big generalization, but tend to want.
And I apologize for that.
No, it's totally fine. I'm making those generalizations. I think a lot of research would suggest that women crave unity. And so I think particularly if there are disagreements or, hey, what path are we going to go on this? I think afterwards, women probably tend to think about it more and could I have handled that situation differently? And how did that go? So I think probably, but I think it's maybe a hard generalization to make.
And again, female leadership makes such a difference, doesn't it? Just having that voice at the top, knowing that somebody is there to speak for you and having the right, it's no different than a strong male leader or a insufficient male leader. You have to have that right person at the top, Kendall.
Yeah, I agree. I think to kind of flip it a little bit on its head, I worked at the LPGA for a while, and I believe the organization was the majority female. And so, I don't know, there were certainly some meetings where there were actually no men in the meeting. And I don't know if the men in the organization were wondering, if their voice was being heard as part of those discussions or not. I don't know, but I certainly think, that as you start to see more and more, female organizations, female-led organizations, I do think that there are going to be those situations where, there can be, one male in a room of, lots of women. And, the question may come like, do you feel like your voice is being heard, or do you feel like you're being represented in this organization? And, I think that to me is when things kind of start to get interesting, right? That's when you start to kind of have a sense of, whether you feel comfortable or uncomfortable. And I certainly think that we're getting close. I don't know if Katie remembers, there was one meeting we had pretty early on. I think there were like 10 women in the room, and the one male in our room was our head of technology, Todd Humphrey. And he just kind of sat and was like, huh, this is a great meeting, And he absolutely loved it. And it was a phenomenal meeting. And I think if you asked him if he felt uncomfortable or his voice was heard, I think he would say certainly. But he did, certainly his voice was heard, and certainly he did not feel uncomfortable.
What's the one question you guys are being asked right now that you're tired of answering. And Katie, I'm sure in comms that you deal with a lot. Eric Tosi, again, flashback to the Vegas time, was in this lead up was, you guys have a hockey team in Vegas? Like, he kept having to answer that. Yes, we have. There's a hockey team coming. What's the one question that you guys are both bombarded with? You go, okay, please, enough of that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it was brutal before we allowed around the name. That was, and that was even from internal coworkers who, I mean, we had it locked down so that we avoided leaks. And so I would get at least texts, 3 texts every morning with, are we going this week? Is it going to be this week? And what was the name going to be? At the moment, I think the 2 questions I get a lot are around the hiring of a coach. When are you going to hire a coach? What's the timeline for hiring a coach? And when are we going to be able to purchase jerseys? We had a lot of success with our merchandise launch and the opening of our store in August. And now people are very keen to get their hands on jerseys.
Kendall, what do people ask you?
Yeah, I don't have to be on the front end of questions like Katie. I'm trying to think, what do people ask me? A lot of people ask about what technologies and services we're using. Primarily, you know, I think within the sports industry, you know, there are certainly ones that are used very commonly across teams. And then, you know, you try to also kind of find the diamonds in the rough, right? That kind of give you perhaps a little bit of an edge on the business side of things. You know, I think as much as the teams compete on the ice, I would say there is a little bit of sense of competition on the business side of things as well. So I probably get that question a lot. And then the other question I get a lot is pricing. How'd you come up with your pricing?
Yeah. So Katie, when are you going to hire a coach?
We are not on a set timeline. I speak to Ron Francis about this regularly. We'll see how the season pans out and what changes there are. And when the time is right, we will move and hire a coach.
Oh, well done. honestly, put up your hand and swear to me you'll answer this truth to the heart. Did either one of you guys know what a Kraken was before you joined that organization?
No.
No.
No, I did not. And it was funny because when we started talking about it, you know, 6-year-olds are very curious. My daughter's been into dinosaurs. She's been into all sorts of things. And then she listens to various kind of sciencey based podcasts around myths and things like that. So she was much more up on what a Kraken was initially than I was. But it's interesting. I think if you grow up here, I didn't obviously grow up in Seattle. People do know, and there's lots of myths and there's lots of stories, and there's the giant Pacific octopus, which lives in the Puget Sound and is the biggest octopus in the world. So I think it's very true to hear. And one funny story, the day that our sort of temporary startup office opened way before I joined, when I think the team had, I don't think the team had officially been awarded. I think deposit day had happened though. Our staff turned up and there was a sign on the door that said the Seattle Kraken. And so a fan had found it, put this sign on the door of the office, and it was kind of meant to be. And then we went through a whole name research process and got there. But no, I certainly did not know what a Kraken was.
Kendall, what did you think it was?
So I was part of that group that was, you know, very locked down. So I think, let's see, so my brother was part of the actual like announcement, and I had no idea. Like when things were happening or what it was going to be. And it was funny because I think it was maybe like the night before he came over and he and my husband went to get a haircut. And it was like midweek. And I was like, what do you do? Like, why are you getting a haircut? And they came up with some excuse. And I'm like, ah, lots is going on. Like, whatever, they got a haircut. And so, you know, then the next like morning or like the next day I got an invite to, you know, this, and it was even like a, I think it said, you know, arena tour event or something like that. And I think I remember, again, this has been such a buildup that I was just like, oh yeah, I'm going to tour the arena, like not thinking like anything as big is happening. And then like that morning it like all started to like kind of click. There was the teaser release, and then I was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna happen. And so I had no idea. I was standing there with the workers and everybody else with no clue, you know, and even from the teaser video, I kind of assumed it was, you know, something C related. And then I think like everybody else, I listened to the announcement and Heidi kind of explained it when she said the name. And so I was kind of like, oh, okay, I get it.
It fits though, doesn't it? Like the eyes, like Katie, like it, oh, yeah. There's a lot you can do with that.
Yeah, we are really excited. And we had a preview, we had a board meeting last week and a game day presentation leads, who you probably know, Johnny Greco,
who was
in Vegas, and Lamont, who was in Arizona, are just phenomenal. And I think that's the fun thing about this brand. Todd talks about it as the Kraken lives in the theater of the mind. No one's ever seen the full Kraken. You don't know what it looks like. You don't know how big it is. You don't know what its power is. And so that gives us some huge potential to build out game day presentation and think about what that experience is in the arena.
I've got goosebumps. As I let you go, what's the next step in your respective jobs where it really becomes like real? Not that what you're doing now isn't front and center, but I mean, September is going to come soon.
I think for me, it will come before September. I have two big projects at the moment. The first is expansion draft. So I think that's when it will be real. I wrote down the tentative date and time that we have from the league on a piece of paper. And I was like, whoa, that's when we're going to have our first player. So that is one. And then the second project I'm working on is training camp. Assuming that will be September, although not knowing, thinking about hopefully getting some fans in to watch training camp and thinking about the opportunity for that to be a fan festival. And I think that's when, having worked or had relationships with the Seahawks or the Sounders and see them go through those types of activations, I think that is when it makes it feel for me like, wow, we're a sports team. We're doing these things too.
Yeah, my side, you know, I mentioned, you know, the top two things on my whiteboard were hiring and then building out our back-end data systems. A lot of that is really in prep for schedule release, which on the ticketing side is our next kind of big event, I would say. So, you know, schedule will get released. That tends to kick off a lot of, you know, ticket sales in the secondary market. You set single game ticket prices based on the schedule. All of that, you know, is coming up, and that's really exciting. But it's also our first time doing it, you know, so there's nothing really like this in the market, right? 44 games. That's a lot of games. That's different than 8 home Seahawks games. That's different than 88, I think, Mariners games. And so, you know, Storm, I think, plays somewhere around 18 or 19. So it's going to be new and different for the market. There's going to be a lot out there, and it's exciting, and we have to be, you know, ready to create, you know, an absolutely awesome buying and purchasing experience for our fans. And then also really kind of prepare for the kind of influx of data that we're going to capture as well as people, you know, purchase, you know, which games are they most excited for, right? Which games do we see kind of fly off the shelf, and which, you know, that automatically starts to people kind of choose their rivalries, right? Even from then, right? You kind of start to see like, okay, people really want to see us play Vegas. People really want to see us play, you know, name X team. It'll also tell us a lot about our fans. You know, Seattle has a lot of local people, but also has a lot of people that have moved here. You know, you think about the Amazons, the Microsofts, Nordstrom's, Starbucks, et cetera. They have been a beacon for people all around the world who may have other team allegiances that obviously Katie is going to work to convert them into Kraken fans, but they're going to want to see their hometown team play too. So we'll learn a lot about that as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a big moment for us on the BI side, and it's an exciting time.
That rivalry with Vancouver and the Pacific Northwest, the Lower Mainland in Canada, is going to be spectacular. I'm really excited about that. And I also, I'm going to stay in contact with you guys over the next few months, because I want to get the reaction that you have when you first look at that list, and you're one of a handful of people in the world that know that expansion list, and you're looking down at your team. So I think that's that is going to be a really cool moment. I was looking forward to this because there's not many times you can kind of peel back the onion a little bit on a first-time operation and a franchise launching, and then obviously two incredible women in the world of hockey. Thanks for this. You've exceeded all expectations. Really appreciate it, Katie and Kendall.
Thank you.
That might be the smartest conversation that I'm ever going to be a part of with Katie and Kendall. They are awesome. And I couldn't help but think through the entire discussion how epic that first staff meeting with their group coming off Zoom when everybody's in the same room, that first staff meeting is either going to be like a grand slam where it's just going to be a party and wah, or it's going to be, everybody's going to be off in their corner, almost wishing that they're back in the Zoom. I don't know. When you hire everybody and spend so much time over computers instead of in the same room. But a couple of things. One, Katie acknowledging she didn't know what a Kraken was, and we all know now. And it's so universally accepted. Once you know Kraken, Sea Monster, and that logo is spectacular. And I was waiting, I'll be flat out honest. I was waiting for Kendall to give us the code of secrecy promise when she talked about the two scoreboards in the rink. Like, you can't say anything, but we're going to have these two scoreboards. I have no idea what that's going to look like. Thank you to Kendall and Katie. We also thought that it would be really important and educational for all of us to hear from the person who put that staff together. That includes Katie and Kendall. And Todd Lewicki is the CEO of the Seattle Kraken, who joined us clad in Kraken paraphernalia from his car as he was running around the city of Seattle. Here is the CEO of the Kraken. Todd, thanks for joining us. I know you're very busy, but wanted to get you on because you spearheaded this whole endeavor, and diversity does come to mind when I think of your franchise and I look at your staffing. Was that part of the strategy, or where did that come from?
Well, you know, I think to create diversity, you have to be intentful. We just felt it was the right thing to do. We were cheered on by Commissioner Bettman. We were cheered on by Kim Davis. But quite frankly, if you're going to start a team from scratch in the modern era, it's the only thing to do. And so we're proud of results, but we still have a ways to go.
Did you have a number in mind when it came to balance?
Well, I know this. I've been in the industry my entire life. And, you know, I think the industry as a whole, you know, needs more diversity. And what we, you know, what you always hear is that, hey, there's just not candidates out there. Well, we had a little bit of time, and we were given the bonus of an extra year before we started. So, you know, we were intentful. And I think what we found is that as we're building a diverse organization, we're better for it. There's the culture, the self-esteem, and there's lots of people who represent all sorts of diversity who have a passion for this game as well. So we're excited by what we're doing. I hope someday it's not out of the norm.
And you did this because you were one of the first people on board, and then you did all the hiring without an HR person, without somebody over your shoulder. Like, this really came from your vision.
Well, I think it came from our ownership's vision. And I think it came from, you know, to take credit for all of our diversity, you know, it started with a small group of us, and we're now, I think, 140 strong, and we're going to keep growing. But, you know, I think it's the collective will of the organization to build an organization that looks like the community we serve. And, you know, there are some great stories about it. I'll tell you one briefly if I could, but, I was skating at a rink here in Renton, and a guy was flying around the rink, and he was the fastest guy on the ice that day. And so I caught up with him. You know, an African-American guy, and I started chatting with him, and lo and behold, it was Dr. Joel Boyd's son. And Dr. Boyd was the first African-American team doctor in the National Hockey League, happened to be with the Minnesota Wild, and I happened to be the former president of the Minnesota Wild back in the day. So I started talking to Kyle. He got his dad on the phone, and his dad said, hey, you got the wrong kid. It's my daughter who wants to talk to you. And so I invited Kyle and Kendall for a coffee at Starbucks. They walked in the door. I looked at them, and I thought, man, I would love to hire both of them, and we did. Kendall's our vice president of strategy, and Kyle's in charge of all sorts of things, including our outreach, and they're fantastic people. And do they show up with a little more passion than the next person? I think maybe they do. I think that there's a passion for this game. There's a passion to introduce this game to all sorts of people who don't necessarily see themselves being a part of this game. And it really has given our organization additional mission.
Kendall, we just heard from her, like just a firecracker and so brilliant and smart. And Katie, the same thing, comes at it from a different angle. And that also must be part of the strategy to bring the game and expand the game.
It is. And if we want this to work, we've made a mighty big bet here, you know, on a privately financed building, the highest price ever paid for an NHL team, I think, building an incredible training center. If you want that bet to work, you need to be smart. And so not only is diversity the right thing from sort of, you know, satisfying our soul, but it's sound business. So we're thrilled with the team that's coming, we've only just begun. There's more to come, but it's pretty exciting.
Hey, you're on the stretch drive here, under 6 months until training camp starts.
Crazy, picking the team, but my brother happens to be in town. We've been touring the building. It's just, every time I go in the building, the same thing happens. I get goosebumps. Like it's going to be such a beautiful building. We saved that historic roof and then dug deep and built a new arena under it. So the arena scales. It ties back to this defining moment of 1962 where we hosted the World's Fair. And it's just going to be an incredibly brilliant, beautiful arena and a wonderful place to watch the National Hockey League.
Hey, while we got you here, what's the next big thing that you're looking forward to on your list?
Well, we've made a lot of progress. We've got broadcast deals in place. We've got many of our partnerships in place. I'm so proud of the partnership that we've done with Amazon to create the first zero carbon arena in the world. So a lot of really good work has been done despite a global pandemic. But we have big things coming. We've got to pick a team here in about 100 days. We've got to finish off construction of the arena. We've got to get our training center open. Working on a project for American Hockey League in Palm Springs. So never a day where there isn't something big going on.
Hey, what do the two brothers talk about when you guys tour the rink?
It's emotional, because now it's presenting itself. And, yeah. I remember seeing my brother, walking through the building, and it was a hole. And we were excited about excavation, but it was a lot of backhoes and digging dirt. And now we're able to walk into suites that are getting finished. We're able to see the beautiful glass on the north end of the building present itself and bring light into this. And I really believe that we're building one of the most, if not the most beautiful arena in America, certainly. And, it's really satisfying. And I grew up a hockey fan my whole life. I had worked here as the CEO of the Seattle Seahawks. That whole time I played hockey. And I used to tell anybody, listen, hey, this someday could be a good hockey town. I just feel it. There's demographics, there's psychographics, but you could just feel it. It's a rugged place, and hockey always felt like it belonged here. And now we have this incredible opportunity to bring it, and not just bring hockey, but bring hope. And, some people have lost the faith. Those who haven't have been our fans. They have kept the faith through this whole thing, and we are so indebted to them that we're going to do everything we can to make this great.
Well said, and well done with your franchise and some great pillars under that foundation of the rink and the franchise itself. I really appreciate this, Todd.
Can't wait to have you guys out, and we'll have a grand time. Today is actually another beautiful day here in Seattle. We'll hope for a sunny day, and we'll take you on a grand tour of the arena or training center.
Well, you're in your car. You got to get places. That's how busy you are. Be well, my friend.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
I can't do that for my car because my car is a mess. But that logo, when you see that logo, and that is just one of those conversations where you go, I can't wait to get to Seattle in that first season of the Kraken. And there's some pressure on that group. I mean, Vegas set the bar or raised the bar or put the bar into the stratosphere. I don't think Seattle has any misconceptions that they're going to go to a Stanley Cup final in the first year, but being competitive out of the gate is certainly on their radar more so. And then just getting to the starting line with the next 6 months coming out of a pandemic and how you do that and how you get players who change teams and get their families in and crossing borders. And it's there's challenges there that nobody's ever experienced before. And Katie and Kendall and Todd and the entire group, we wish them the best of luck and welcome to the National Hockey League, the 32nd franchise. I got to tell you a story. We have a studio in Vegas with the Golden Knights at our practice facility. And that's where we do our road games from. And we're trying to come up with all the studios have a name, at least back in Canada, where we are Studio 42B like a soundstage. So I talked to to my boss, Eric Tosi, who is the same position as Katie with the Vegas Golden Knights. I said, what if we call it Studio 31? Like we're the 31st franchise, Studio 31. So that's what our studio is, where we do our road games, host them from Studio 31. Looking forward to visiting Studio 32. In Seattle when the Kraken come on board. They will be challenged to make the playoffs, but so many other teams are right now. You think about clubs that are going through a reset, San Jose, or a rebuild. Where's Buffalo going right now and the disappointment around that franchise? But what about modeling Seattle after a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, who have gone through this process of being competitive in a different fashion? They have a high profile owner who goes at it in a non-traditional hockey sense. And they've changed the model. They've gone through a different scouting staff and being a manager. And it all comes down to, you can spend the money or you can't spend the money. You can still be successful if you have a great pillar. And that pillar is Rod Brind'Amour. This team, the Carolina Hurricanes, went 9 years between playoff appearances. They made the playoffs the last 2 years, went to a conference final under Rod Brind'Amour's tutelage. And this year, the Carolina Hurricanes won 20 of their first 27 games to challenge the likes of the great Tampa Bay Lightning in that division. And I just can't rave enough about the job that Rod Brind'Amour does in molding that team. Doesn't have the biggest budget, doesn't have the best goaltending. Got some good goalies, he's got some good defensemen, but he makes that team tick. And we're going to get him on the podcast at some point, because there's a lot of different places that he will go. And again, all the money in the world, but you still need that guy to guide your franchise. And that is Rod Brind'Amour. Thanks to everybody for chipping into this episode of The Chirp with Darren Millard, Kendall Boyd Tyson, as well as Katie Townsend, Todd Lewicki, Robert Bob Bender, who's been silenced for the second straight episode, really. But we are going to get him on next week, because next week we are going to chat with John Hamm. He is a super fan of the St. Louis Blues, Don Draper, and is starring in a couple of movies that are coming out, including Maverick, the sequel to Top Gun. Bob, what do you think about John Hamm?
Well, we've already recorded the interview, and I thought it went swimmingly, and the listeners are going to enjoy it. Nobody wants to hear from me, Darren. You bring me in against my will sometimes, just to lighten the mood a little bit. But John Hamm next week, and this week's episode that we just completed, we're putting a bow on it right now, was a bit of a challenge putting together, but so happy we got all the voices on that we wanted to get on. And thanks again to Katie and to Kendall and to Todd. And yes, looking forward to that 32nd franchise joining the NHL.
Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, share, tell everybody about it. It's The Chirp with Darren Millard, and it's getting bigger and it's getting better, and it's going to go blockbuster, literally, next week with John Hamm. Have a great week, everybody.